Welcome back to Disclaimers Aside, a bi-weekly podcast where I share the raw and honest stories of people in my community, Disclaimers Aside. I'm your host, Aisata Amadou, and let's dive into today's episode. Everyone, welcome back to Disclaimers Aside. Welcome back to another podcast episode and happy Black History Month. Today's episode is going to be all about Black History Month, but before we jump into that portion of today's episode, I wanted to do a little catch up because I feel like it's been a minute since we've chatted. Over winter break, I pre-recorded a lot of the episodes that have been going up and that are going to be going up in the coming weeks, which has been really nice for me because this semester has been a lot busier than last semester. Even though in terms of my units, the workload is pretty much the same. This semester, I joined a couple clubs, joined a couple orgs, got onto the board for some things, took on some more extracurriculars, and I definitely did that, not really keeping in mind my personal capacity. It's hard because when you're on a large campus with so many opportunities to get involved and literally a club for anything and everything, it's so hard, I think, these days to say no to things. So we're managing. I'm definitely going to maybe reevaluate in a month or two if it becomes unsustainable, whether or not there are some things that I just need to let go of. But I feel like for now, at the beginning of every semester, at least for me, it's a lot of me getting used to my workload, getting used to my new schedule. And then usually as the weeks kind of go by, things kind of start to mellow out, kind of get into the groove of things, and my workload is a lot less overwhelming, especially after coming from a month of not really doing much. I've been really enjoying my classes this semester. And overall, I'm just excited for spring. Spring's like around the corner. I feel like spring is always the prettiest time on campus. Fall was really pretty on campus this year, but I remember last spring at Santa Cruz, the spring was really beautiful to experience. Another thing that I'm kind of looking forward to is Ramadan. I think there's like less than 50 days left until Ramadan. I saw a post on the Instagram Muslim about how there was like 50 days left about a week ago. So that's definitely something to kind of look forward to, especially as a Muslim. I'm excited this year because I feel like my experience with Ramadan is going to be very different than last year, and I'm looking forward to that. So this week's unpopular opinion is related to the topic of today's episode, and that is that I think that Black History Month can be performative if not done in the right way. I was debating whether or not I wanted to make this my unpopular opinion. I was telling my roommate, I don't know if this needs to be said, like I feel like this is already a given, but she was like, no, I think some people actually do need to hear that. What I mean by Black History Month can be performative is that I think non-Black people, and especially non-Black entities like companies or orgs on their social media presences, can fall into the habit of just posting a cute little graphic saying Happy Black History Month or saying Happy Black History Month and like reposting a couple graphics but not actually doing the work that is required to uphold the values of Black history. I'll get into this more in depth later on in today's episode, but I just want this to serve as a healthy reminder that February is the month of Black History Month. But it's not just this month that you should be upholding, that you should be learning and engaging with Black history. It's something that you should be engaging with all throughout the year. And I think it is also so, so crucial that you are actually doing the work behind Black History Month, this month and every month. And that is engaging in a lot of the history, a lot of the social issues that we are dealing with today, and just being educated and informed and not just posting a graphic as the band-aid solution. I don't know if it needs to be said, but I'm gonna say it on this podcast. Disclaimers aside. I want to start off this episode by talking about kind of the history behind Black History Month. I don't think this is something that we talk about too often. So Black History Month, I'm just taking this off of the internet, is, quote, an annual celebration of achievements by African Americans and a time for recognizing their central role in U.S. history. It began initially as Negro History Week and was formally established by historian Carter G. Woodson and other prominent African Americans in 1926. This came half a century after the 13th Amendment was formally abolished slavery in the United States. Woodson, a Harvard historian, and Jesse E. Moreland founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History in September of 1915. Essentially, they aimed to research and promote the achievements of Black Americans and other people of African descent. The ASALH sponsored the first Negro History Week in 1926 during the second week of February to encompass the birthdays of President Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. It kind of started as a way to promote and celebrate Black history in schools, clubs, and organizations through performances and lectures. By the late 1960s, thanks in part to the civil rights movement and a growing awareness of Black identity, Negro History Week had evolved into Black History Month on many college campuses. President Gerald Ford officially recognized Black History Month in 1976, calling upon the public to seize the opportunity to honor two often neglected Black Americans in every area of endeavor throughout our history. Black History Month, in essence, is a time to honor the contributions and legacy of African Americans across U.S. history and society. Some of the historical figures that I think experience light shed on their accomplishments during Black History Month include Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Marcus Garvey, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, and more. So that's kind of a general overview of Black History Month. It started as a week-long celebration and eventually evolved into an entire month. One of the things that I think not everyone knows about Black History Month is there's actually a theme every year to Black History Month. Since 1976, every American president has designated February as Black History Month and also endorsed a specific theme to correlate with that year. This year's theme is Black Resistance, which, can I say, I am in love with. It explores how African Americans have resisted historic and ongoing oppression in all forms, especially the racial terrorism of lynching, racial pogroms, and police killings since the nation's earliest days. I think the theme Black Resistance, when I was kind of thinking about it and my thoughts on it, I think it puts an emphasis on Black survivalism when a lot of the times discourse about the Black experience often forgoes or even disregards the idea of Black joy. I feel like preserving elements like Black joy when we talk about Black resistance is important so that we don't fall into dehumanizing Black people and seeing them as human beings, which is such a huge issue in a lot of main discourse about Black history and Black legacies. I also love the idea of Black resistance being more than traditional norms of resistance, such as organizing, protesting, and assembling, but rather to encompass things like living authentically in a way that isn't restricted to the bounds of what a white supremacist society informs that Black people should live their lives. More specifically, what I mean by that is, I think, breaking free from the chains that stereotypes are to Black people, finding Black excellence and Black prosperity in being who you are, whether that be soft or artsy, outgoing, reserved, grounded, athletic, intellectual, or imaginative, and just kind of existing outside the bounds of a lot of stereotypes that are placed on Black people. So I kind of hinted at this a little bit in my unpopular opinion, but I want to shift gears and really quickly just talk about some of the challenges that can come with the tokenization of Black History Month. As a whole, I think it's a given. It has a tremendous educational value as well as a community building aspect tied to it. But I think some of the challenges come with how Black History Month can be tokenized, especially by performativism and the rise of performative activism. While Kanye West is definitely a controversial figure that I don't condone or support in terms of his recent anti-Semitic remarks, I think he has brought up a valuable point in conversation regarding Black History Month.
My dad was a Black Panther, but you know, when Disney makes Black Panther, now when you look it up, you don't see my dad protecting his neighborhood. You see this character that's made for Black people to idolize that was designed by a white person and put out by a white company. So it's controlling the narrative to say, we're gonna show you Harriet Tubman, we're not gonna show you Nat Turner. And they do it every chance they get. Maleficent, they called her race of people the Moors. And the Moors and I just saw it again. I was just like, yo, if you erase our history, most Black people, we think we came from slaves. We don't know our bloodline. And we're given Black History Month and we take that like it's some gift to us. No, it's a programming to us. Because also what they show in Black History Month is us getting hosed down, reminding us that we were slaves.
I think Black history as a whole has an issue in the erasure of important Black figures if they don't fit a narrative that is palatable to white society. One of the most classic examples of this was the whole Malcolm X versus Martin Luther King Jr. Growing up, when I was taught Black history in my history classes in the US, I was kind of taught and in essence conditioned to believe that Malcolm X was an extremist. It felt like history was constantly pitting Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr., two of these very prominent Black men that were cornerstones to the civil rights movement, against each other. Again, because Malcolm X was not palatable to white people in the same approach that King was, he was often demonized by mainstream society and continues to be demonized to this day in the 21st century. I remember my junior year of high school in APUSH, my teacher went on a rant about how Malcolm X was an extremist, which, come on, in this day and age, we're really gonna be calling Malcolm X an extremist? I think we see this constantly in Black history because it's written by white society. We also see kind of the erasure of Black women and the rewriting of Black women in history to fit into, again, the narrative of what a Black woman is or should be or is perceived by white society. This is kind of what happened to Sojourner Truth. In 1851, former slave Sojourner Truth gave a famous speech called "Ain't I a Woman?" In the speech, she eloquently puts into words not only the dangerous aspect of slavery and how it's a deep-seated harm to society, but she also kind of describes her positionality as a Black woman centuries before the term intersectionality is even coined a term in main discourse. Her speech, despite all of the eloquence in the original speech, was rewritten by the press in a way that painted her as an uneducated and crass Black woman, simply to fit into the expectations of the time of what a Black woman sounds like. Even in my 20th century gender class, I'm taking a class that's like a history class on 20th century gender in the US, my Berkeley professor presented the altered version as the correct version. I was truly shocked because I thought it was common knowledge. I was lucky enough that I had taken a Black studies course when I was at UCSC, and so I knew better, but a lot of the people in my lecture fully just accepted that as the truth when really it wasn't. This erasure not only I think is so crippling in the sense that it perpetuates that Black people can only fall into these stereotypes, but it's also reductionist to the diversity of Black history. I think there's also a harm in constantly centering Black narratives around Black suffering like slavery. This is a large criticism, I think, recently behind trends of producers constantly pumping out films about slavery, and I think it can also be applied to the way that Black history is taught in the United States. Black history as a whole is not really given the care and attention it deserves on a fundamental level in the US, which is cruel given the fact that this country was quite literally built on the back of slavery. When these slavery narratives dominate the stories that we constantly consume, so when we're thinking about movies and TV shows and just in main discourse in general about Black history, it perpetuates the nature that Black people's value is only in relation to how they can benefit the white man. I think that's why movies like Black Panther were so powerful and were so resonating with the Black community, because it for once was a movie that displayed Black excellence and Black joy and a Black narrative that was completely and utterly removed from the history of slavery. Obviously, educating people about the history of slavery and how that has shaped the society that we live in today is very important and crucial in education, but it shouldn't be the only stories that are written about Black people. So to sum it up, I think Black History Month just needs to be critically revamped in the sense that history as a whole needs to be rewritten in order to reflect the true diversity of Black history. And we also just need to be careful in our day-to-day with performativism on social media. Do the work, educate yourself, do your research. It's not going to happen overnight. That's why Black History Month is an important time, I think, to recognize Black history, and I think it's a good starting point for a new framework of thinking, but it shouldn't be the end point. I don't think on February, what is it, like 28th is the end of the month, February 28th, that should be the end of your re-education in terms of Black history. So if you guys follow the Disclaimers Aside podcast Instagram, I just posted a post about 5 revolutionary Black women that you should know about. I wanted to shout this post out. You guys should definitely go check it out over on the Instagram, but I also wanted to kind of talk through some of the women that I chose to feature in that post and why I made these specific choices. I want to preface this by saying that this isn't going to be the only post for Black History Month. I really want to release some other fun posts just highlighting important Black figures that have contributed to Black history. But also in general, I try on my Disclaimers Aside podcast Instagram to always just be constantly posting about important Black figures in society. In general, I think Disclaimers Aside is definitely very much geared for people of color, and specifically women of color is typically kind of the demographic that I think this podcast swings towards. And I'm not mad about that because I feel like there are just tons and tons of podcasts out there for white people and white women. Not that white people can't listen to this podcast. In fact, I think white people could definitely benefit from listening to a lot of these podcasts because pretty much every guest that I've had on this podcast and a lot of kind of what I focus these podcast episodes gear towards better representation for people of color in general. With this post, kind of my intention behind this post was I wanted to share important figures in Black history that don't typically experience limelight for their accomplishments, because I feel like every year for Black History Month, like, we just reshare the same people over and over again. Like, there are millions of posts about King and Malcolm X and some of the other historical figures that I've already mentioned before, which is fine. I think those figures are very, again, they're cornerstones to the civil rights movement and a huge reason why our society is the way it is today in terms of getting better over the years. But I think also we can do both. We can recognize those figures, but we can also learn about new and important figures in Black history. The first woman that I shared was Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. She was the first democratically elected president in Africa, the first female democratically elected president in Africa, and she was actually president of Liberia. During her time as president in Liberia, Sirleaf led Liberia through reconciliation efforts after a decade-long civil war. She brought the country to a much better place in terms of healing, and this awarded her a Nobel Peace Prize in 2011 because she accomplished huge economic, social, and political achievements during her presidency. To this day, Sirleaf remains a luminary voice for the expansion of women's rights and women's participation in the political process. I think she stands out to me because I feel like, especially being West African, knowing a little bit about African politics and the way that elections kind of go in a lot of African countries, it's impressive. It's impressive to see, first of all, a woman be elected. Second of all, a woman be elected and be able to be so successful, because I think there's a lot of corruption going on in African politics. A lot of the times, the way that presidents are quote-unquote democratically elected happens via undemocratic means. And so being able to see, you know, an African woman take charge and clean up her country after a decade-long civil war is just honestly admirable and a beautiful example of how women's participation in politics can be so fundamental to positive change. The next woman that I shared was Wangari Maathai. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. She was the first Black African woman to receive a Nobel Peace Prize for her efforts in environmental conservation. In the 1970s, Maathai founded the Greenbelt Movement, which is an environmental non-governmental organization focused on environmental conservation and women's rights. She was born in Kenya. Unfortunately, she passed, so may she rest in power. But I feel like when we think about the environmental conservation movement, all we think about is that one girl, Greta Thunberg, which all the power to her. She's doing a lot. Trust me. So much respect for her. But let's associate Wangari with that movement now too, because she really paved the way for that, especially in Africa. Next is a personal favorite of mine, Ava DuVernay. This is a name that I was going back and forth on whether I wanted to include it on this list, because I feel like a good amount of people know who Ava DuVernay is, but also that might just be because I'm obsessed with films and I love anything that Ava DuVernay has directed. Ava DuVernay, if you guys don't know who she is, she did not pick up a camera until the age of 32, which is really impressive because her films are just so well done and so well thought out that you would think that she was like a child prodigy. But I think she, in a lot of her interviews, kind of discusses how it's never too late to start pursuing your dreams. And I think that's such a hopeful message, because I think a lot of people in their 20s feel this pressure to figure out what they want to do with the rest of their lives and have things perfectly mapped out. But she's kind of one of those examples of the way that it doesn't necessarily have to look like that for you. She's made history as a writer, director, and producer, and she was the first African woman to win Best Director at the Sundance Film Festival, be nominated for a Best Director Golden Globe, direct a film nominated for a Best Picture Oscar, and direct a film with a budget over $100 million. Give this woman her crown. Her work has made her highest grossing Black woman director in American box office history, and today she continues to rewrite the narrative constructed by a predominantly white industry. I have so much admiration for Ava DuVernay, partly because if I could live in an ideal society where I could really pursue and do whatever I want, I was talking to my roommate about this the other day, but if I could do whatever I wanted and I wasn't, the first gen daughter of African immigrant parents, I think it would be, I would want to be a producer or a director or just one of the higher up people in a media company like Netflix, where I got to decide the films and TV shows that are being created, because there is a lot of power in that, because I think the media shapes a lot of our notions today. And something that I see in a lot of Ava DuVernay's film is just her bringing humanization to a lot of her Black characters and Black stories. Some of the things that she's famous for directing include Selma, that's a film about Martin Luther King Jr., 13th, an important documentary that kind of traces how slavery led to Jim Crow and how Jim Crow led to the new Jim Crow, which is the mass prison industrial complex. When They See Us was a chilling show about the Central Park 5 case. She directed A Wrinkle in Time, featuring a Black main character in a fantasy movie. She's just done so much. She has an entire discography you can look up online. And one of my favorite quotes from her is, "Positive characterizations are complex characterizations. That's all we need to know. They shouldn't be saccharine. They shouldn't feel like medicine." And I feel like that just embodies who she is as a person. The way that she is so skillfully able to weave and bring humanity and depict humanity in such a raw way in her movies and TV shows is just like no other. Next up, Halima Aden. She shares the first name of my youngest sister. Halima was born in a refugee camp in Kenya, and she moved to St. Cloud, Minnesota at the age of 7. In 2016, she competed in the Miss Minnesota USA pageant, making her the first Somali American to do so. Halima Aden has been redefining traditional standards of beauty through her modeling by diversifying the industry and improving, I think, just the general visibility for underrepresented demographic of Muslim women. And I'd like to add more than just Muslim women, also Black Muslim women, because I think even with all of the representation, the rise of representation of Muslim women, there is a huge lack of representation when it comes to Black Muslim women. And she's fighting against that. Despite her success in the fashion industry, Halima has actually recently kind of opened up on her own social media platforms about the exploitative nature of the industry, like the fashion industry as a whole, and how she was a lot of the times forced to compromise her religious beliefs. This is kind of a case that I would love to do a future episode on, like just do research and really talk about, you know, the whole situation. Because I remember reading about her story on Instagram and just having a lot of mixed emotions, like shocked and sadness, because it's like you look up to this figure that is, I think, representing you in the media, and you have this sense of hope because it's like things are changing because people that look like you are finally gaining visibility in the fashion industry. But then you find out that even to just get to that point, she has still experienced a lot of discrimination within the industry, and the fight is not over. One of my favorite quotes from Halima is the quote, "There is not one description of beauty, that in fact it has different faces, different stories and different backgrounds, and it's important to embrace all of those." I love that. I love kind of the nod to recognizing that a lot of the times in the fashion industry, beauty is seen through the eyes of Western and Eurocentric features, and how beauty is much larger than that, encompasses much more than that, and that is representative through the different faces that have yet to be represented in the fashion and modeling industry. The last revolutionary woman that I wanted to share is Audre Lorde. Another one that, like, I feel like a good amount of people know, but not everyone knows, you know? So if you don't know who Audre Lorde is, Audre Lorde dedicated both her life and her creative talent to confronting and addressing injustices of racism, sexism, classism, and homophobia. Lorde is famous for her poetry. I think something that's so admirable about Lorde is that she really pursued actualizing political change through her writing. I remember the first time that I was exposed to Lorde and her writing was actually in a political writing class my freshman year of college online, and just her writing, there's just so much there. I still have yet to read a lot of her work, but if you haven't picked up anything written by Audre Lorde, please do, because it is truly revolutionary writing in the making. I love her quote, "I am not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from my own." And I think that is just something that is very relevant to today and has been relevant for, unfortunately, way too long of a time. So now I want to share some Black book recs. Over on my YouTube channel, I have made a few videos sharing some Black book recs, so I just pulled a few of these just from those videos. I'm gonna link those videos in the description box if you guys want some more Black book recs, or if you just want to hear about some of these books more in depth, because I'm just gonna run through these pretty quickly, give you guys maybe like a 1-2 sentence summary. I do want to make an updated video because I don't think I made one last year, or I did actually make one last year, but I do just need to make an updated one this year, I think. So these are just kind of a few from a few years ago, but I just feel like they are so good that they still apply to today. First one is Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. This is a book that's based on the series that the one guy does on YouTube where he has really uncomfortable conversations with non-Black people. He has really interesting conversations, and he does such a good job at like pulling out people's personal biases and like confronting them in a very respectful way that I think people can learn a lot from. This book is definitely more geared towards non-Black people. I feel like if you're Black and you read this, it can be healing in the sense that he recognizes a lot of our experiences, but I feel like it's just more valuable for non-Black people to read and learn from. Next one is The New Jim Crow by Alexander Michel. Definitely one of my favorite nonfiction books out there. This book kind of traces how slavery led into Jim Crow and how Jim Crow has evolved into the mass prison industrial complex. If you've seen 13th, it's basically 13th but in book format, and it goes in a lot of detail. There's a lot to be learned from this book. I think it's a book that everyone should read. It's on Aes Sedai's required reading list, so make sure you guys check it out if you haven't already picked it up. Next one is The Vanishing Half. This is my literary fic rec of this list. It's kind of based on Passing. It's about these two twin sisters that are light-skinned. They grow up in like a light-skinned town. I didn't know this was actually a thing until I read this book. One of the sisters decides that she's gonna move to LA and marry a white man and try and pass as white, and it traces her story and how that kind of fares for her and the fear that she lives in that. It's interesting too, because I think it, something that it depicts, because she comes from like, I think Louisiana or somewhere in the South, and she moves to California, like the Hollywood area, and it kind of depicts racism that exists there. Because I think a lot of the times when we read books or watch movies about racism, it always tends to be set in the South, but it's like, no, racism actually does happen in states like California, especially in Southern California. All About Love by Bell Hooks is just a book that every human being on the planet should read. It's a book about radical self-love. It will make you kind of reframe and rethink your relationship with love and the different forms of love. So it covers self-love, platonic love, and romantic love. And I think it's just a very healing book. It does it through this lens of feminism. So it's a very empowering and transformative read. Children of Blood and Bone, this is my fantasy rec. Tomi Adeyemi is Nigerian, and she wrote this fantasy book series that's still ongoing, still waiting for the newest release. It's kind of a blend between Black Panther and Avatar The Last Airbender, but a lot of the lore behind this fantasy world that she sets up in this book is based on the rise of the BLM movement and modern day racism in America. Next one is The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. I read this in high school. It's a nonfiction book about this woman, Henrietta Lacks, who had her stem cells stolen by her when she had cancer. She was exploited by doctors at the time, and she wasn't really told. She wasn't ever really given the option to give consent to give up her cells, and it kind of explores how the history of how the medical industry has been exploitative towards the Black community. I think it's a very important read, and I feel like anyone who is a STEM girly, anyone who's a pre-health, pre-med, pre-whatnot major has to read this book. Last rec is one that I read this past year, and it is Finding Me by Viola Davis. I think this is a really good rec. If you are looking for a memoir, Viola Davis is my favorite actress, and she, in this book, kind of talks about just her life experiences being a dark-skinned actress, and how certain roles kind of propelled her to fame, and how she was definitely overlooked throughout a lot of her life because of the fact that she was a dark-skinned woman. She talks about how she went from poverty and putting herself through going to Juilliard and pursuing acting and then finally blowing up. She does it in just such a skillful way. She also does it in a way that's really easy to understand, that is very illuminary, and is done in like, I think, under 300 pages or just a little over 300 pages. So it's very short. I recommend the audiobook for this one just because it's narrated by Viola herself. So those are some Black book recs. Stay tuned over on my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/AisetaAmadou. In the description box, if you guys want some newer Black book recs, I'll probably draft up a little post for the podcast Instagram as well. In general, if you guys aren't following the podcast Instagram, please take a minute to go do that, because I just want that to be like a community space for you guys to kind of expand on some of the conversations that are brought up in these episodes, so that it's more than just me talking into a microphone and like shouting into the void. Seriously though, I can't thank you guys enough for all of your guys' support in general. Truly been loving the Disclaimers Aside podcast community. So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I will have all of the links that I mentioned in the episode in the show notes, including some sources for some of the information if you guys want to do a little more research into Black History Month and just kind of learn about the way that you can reframe your thinking and your perspective in order to just better support and better actualize the goals behind Black History Month. I will see you guys in next week's episode. Bye.